There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Thursday. Glad to have you along and love for you to come by and see us at Gulf Coast Tools in Foley, hanging out with Chris McClain and talking about what's, well, one of the high holy holidays for all things that go on in the store. That's Father's Day coming up on Sunday. If you've got a store that you've got great name brand and off-brand power equipment and Big Green Eggs, this is like, this is the Father's Day apex right here.
Yes, sir.
You know, we, got a lot of things that dads need.
You dang right. Not want, but need. See, what, Chris, see, this is a man that knows what he's talking about. So if you have not gotten dad what he needs for Father's Day, you can stop by and see us today. Or you said you're open till...
We're open till 6. We're open 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and then on Sundays 10 to 5.
Okay, so they got you. If you're a procrastinator, you should get it done now, but there's that Saturday window and there's that Sunday window before dad says, well, you're written out of the will. I was looking at it, and I'm focused more on the DeWalt. Number one, that's kind of where we're set up here inside the store, but I'm a DeWalt fan. And I was walking through, and there's a lot of the items that I completely recognize and things I use, but you, a lot more of the DeWalt stuff, that a little deeper dive into DeWalt that you have.
Yeah, we try to carry a lot of the Behr tools, the Behr cordless tools that you may not find at a big box store.
Yep.
The cordless hammer drills, the cordless drywall guns, cutout tools, chainsaws, circular saws, all that items, as well as the corded tools, the joist and angle drills, chop saws.
Yeah. You
know, try and carry a good line of that.
Yeah, and it's I think people do get at least... in my world, get brand, get to where they find a brand they like and stick with that brand. Number one, just maybe because of interchangeable parts, but I mean, I like DeWalt. I mean, not that I got buddies that love Makita, but I, right.
Yeah, as long as you, you know, you stay with the Makita, DeWalt, any of the higher end, you know, right. Bosch, you know, they all make good power tools. It just, like you said, it kind of comes down to people get brand specific and want to stay within. In that brand,
right, and in that, using being able to interchange different power sources, you know, have this one this fits well, this fits my reciprocating saw, this fits my drill, my, you know, and speaking of that, batteries are a big part, obviously, of this cordless thing, and battery technology seems to be every year getting better and better and better on these.
Oh, it is absolutely, and the big thing in the last few years has been brushless tools.
Okay, yeah, I see that. When it says brushless, explain that to folks.
Basically, in your old-style motors, they use carbon brushes that against the armature.
Yeah.
And the new brushless tools, the biggest advantage is runtime. You can get about 40% longer runtime off the same battery.
Same battery, same tool, but this one being brushless and this one being not, the 40% more.
Yeah, up to, just depends, you know. But
so with the new battery tech, the way the batteries keep getting better and better, and that, then this is like a, I mean, there's probably pieces of equipment you can have for a whole weekend on a charge.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've got Makita stuff. You know, I've did a deck project the other day and had a brushless impact. I used it about 8 hours on one charge.
That's great. Instead of having to always be like, well, at some point I'm going to have to stop for 45 minutes and put this on a charge.
Yes. Yes, sir.
It makes a big difference here. And what about, tell me about Craig Tool.
Craig Tool is a company that has a lot of products for wood joinery. Very simple, innovative, effective solutions that someone just doing it on the weekend up to someone building a cabinet shop, you know,
right.
Putting out multiple cabinets
for, like,
you know,
weekend warriors
up to professionals. they have the full line covered for you. And they put a lot of thought and innovation into their product. And it's just a system that works really well. Their main joinery system is a pocket hole system.
Okay.
And that just allows you to drill, join wood with a pocket hole that's drilled in and angled. And you can conceal that pocket hole. And it's just very strong, very effective, simple, and fast.
Yeah, you got a great selection of their tools as well. And then let's talk about the piece de resistance going into Father's Day, and that is the Big Green Egg. And your selection of not only the eggs, talk to both the eggs, but you also have accessories, you got repair parts, you got all kind of stuff.
Right. The Big Green Egg has been around over 25 years.
Really?
They've been around forever, and they have a huge accessory line. You know, anything from grilling tools to charcoal fire starters. You want a wood table, you want an aluminum island, or they've got everything covered.
That's
got
to be really popular for Father's Day. I mean, if Dad's been real, real good, Dad can get his first or another Big Green Egg. But, you know, budget-wise, somebody can come in here, and if Dad's got the Big Green Egg, they can buy the accessories that go with it. What a great Father's Day gift.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. You can come in and spend, you know, under $20, grab Pop's you know, some starters or some small accessories that he may need, or you can jump up higher into the, you know, give him a mini max.
Very good. And also, y'all do service work on Big Green Eggs.
Right. So, Big Green Egg has a lifetime warranty on all, you know, the ceramic parts. And we keep all that, or try to keep most of that in stock. So, if someone has an issue down the road, they can come here, whether they purchase it here or not. We can process claims and handle them in house.
That's great to know.
That way, get you out cooking. And
I love it. It's a good thing. All right, we're stopping by today, tomorrow, even Saturday, and because Chris is a charitable soul to you procrastinators, he's open Sunday, too, to get that day of Father's Day gift. Thanks for having us out, and tell folks, what are we eating now? Because food's going fast.
We've got some pulled pork out there.
Smells great.
Did a couple Boston butts overnight last night, and then we've got some just standard Kaneka sausage and
pretty darn good. Y'all come on by and grab lunch. Thanks for having us out here.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, we're coming right back. More. We are live at Gulf Coast Tools. Joining us, Congressman Bradley Byrne. Of course, he is running the first name in for Senate 2020. Talked a whole bunch about the Senate 2020 stakes. He's one of those names that's officially in, not thinking about it. Talk about his campaigning right here at home and what he's been trying to accomplish in other parts of the state outside of AL1. That and a whole lot more when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Foley at Gulf Coast Tools with Chris and Jay and the whole gang here. And by the way, the lunch is fantastic. So if you've not had lunch yet, when you stomp on by, make sure to grab one of those pulled pork sandwiches or a Kaneka dog with us and some FM Talk. The new run of Huggers, we've got those out here as well. And what Dad needs... Not once. There's like needs for Father's Day, like power tools and Big Green Egg and all the accessories are right here for you. So stop by and see us today in Foley. All right. Let's talk to with AL1's congressman and candidate for U.S. Senate, Bradley Byrne. Good afternoon.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, thanks for making some time for us, because I know you're busy. I was talking about this when we were going into the break, that the job of name recognition, and we can talk about some of the information that's been rolled out by other campaigns out there, but the name recognition and branding of Bradley Byrne in South Alabama, you're good there. It looks pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've been the congressman there for several years and in other positions before that, so I'm well-known in South Alabama. My job is to get to be known Birmingham North, so
yep.
A lot of my travels around the state are focused there.
Yeah, I was, you know, looking at that and kind of how, talk to us a little bit about that with, you know, what you've learned over time running campaigns. Do you get as narrow, I mean, you said Birmingham North, but do you go as narrow as saying, hey, here are some precincts or areas where I don't think I had the name recognition that I should have, and do you drill down and do more events that narrow, or is it a broader swath when you're working this?
Well, in that regard, we know that about 60% of the vote in Alabama is Birmingham North, and we know the people up there don't know me nearly as well as the people in South Alabama do. So you just prioritize each of those communities. So we don't just focus on Birmingham or focus on Huntsville. We go to all those communities up there, Cullman, Gadsden, We spend a lot of time in the Shoals area. I have a daughter that lives there that makes it a little easier for me.
Uh-huh.
Decatur, Gunnersville, Scottsboro, Fort Payne. That area we're focusing a lot on so that we get people up there to know who I am. And it's working, but it's very time-consuming. Not something you can do quickly, and you have to do it over time, but it's working, and we're getting great response, and people are coming forward and being volunteers, et cetera. So I feel real good about it.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was noticing, too, that the volunteer effort for people that are known commodities in those areas of the states, other elected officials and stuff, people stepping forward to kind of be the ambassador for you to their part of the state.
That's right. We call them grassroots leaders, and they're sort of like validators. People in those communities know and respect their mayor, their probate judge, their sheriff, or whoever it is in that area, and we have several in each of these counties. And that, they not only validate me, but then they, in turn, introduce me to more people, and you build out your grassroots infrastructure that way. And, you know, that's very time-consuming to do that, but it really pays off when you get down to the 60-day period before an election. That's when you really got people out there working hard for you and getting the vote out. So we're very pleased where we are and having a blast doing it. We've met a whole lot of new people that we didn't know, and they have been really terrific, very nice to us, very welcoming. As I say, they're jumping on board and helping out.
By the way, I'm going to bounce things around here, too, because I have some questions, of course, about Senate 2020, but I can't have you on and not pick your brain on a couple questions from the House. And the first one was something you and I had talked about last time, and that was the temperature in the House with the Democrats for impeachment. At that point, you said, obviously, there were some people that were wide open for impeachment, but they didn't seem to have the numbers of Democrats necessary. Has that changed since last time we talked?
No, it hasn't. And if you look at the news stories, you see Nancy Pelosi pushing back on this impeachment talk as much as she can. Now, she's got pretty hardcore hotheads in her conference, and they're pushing her pretty hard. I think the number I've seen is about 50 or 60. Well, 50 or 60 is a lot of people, but it is in the 218 it takes to impeach somebody. And you've got a fairly large number of people over there in the Democratic conference that understand, hey, this is not good for our political health, particularly those that are going to be running next year in districts where President Trump won in 2016. So this continued noise is what I call it, about investigations and people talking about impeachment, that is not what the Democratic leadership wants. They're being pushed to that by this hardcore within their conference. And I truly don't think it's going to end up going anywhere, particularly since I think time's beginning to run out on them because, you know, we're getting ready to go into the presidential debates for the Democrats in a little while here, and we're going to be in campaign season. It ain't going to work to impeach a president in campaign season.
Now, although at that point, yeah, they'll switch more of their energy to attacking each other. I will say, though, inside the Democrat ranks, it's that split is shown. What you're talking about in the House is also shown in the presidential hopefuls for the Democrats out there. What do you think about that? I mean, there's, different surveys, different stats show this many percent, 30%, 40% of Americans want to be, live in a socialist country. And then you have the Ocasio-Cortezes and others, and you have people that are obviously Elizabeth Warren on down running for this Democrat primary for presidency that are, I mean, they're not veiled socialists. I mean, the rhetoric is, I mean, that's not, there's no veil, no thin veil on that. It's just naked.
No, there's no question about it. It's been interesting this week because we have three people running for president who are members of the House of Representatives, Eric Swalwell, Seth Moulton, and Tulsi Gabbard. And I've had conversations with all three of them this week. Now, none of the three of them are like top-tier candidates, but it's been interesting having conversations with them. Look, they've got 20-some-odd people running. They've got this process to try to winnow it down for their so-called debates. I don't know how you have a debate with 15, 18 people on the stage, but I guess we're going to see how they do that. At the end of the day, the American people are not going to buy the socialist stuff. So I think the two messages that the Democrats have out there right now, which is investigate, 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 impeach, 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 and then all the socialist stuff, I do not think that's going to work for them. But they're going to keep going after it because that's the direction of the Democratic Party, and there's no question about that.
And I think you're right. Those are the major talking points you hear for the Democrats, and not even, I just wondered if there's a, there's not room for a nuanced, and not that I think that might do them any good for beating President Trump, but there's not even a nuance. There's not somebody saying, listen, I think we really need to get double down and work on, you know, the legacy of Obamacare, but you know, we're not nationalizing this. You know, we need to make sure. There's not even that message. It's just like straight to the left. I mean, as far as you can go, there doesn't seem to be, and maybe there's not room. Maybe those Democrats don't exist anymore that want to hear that more moderate message.
Well, they tried, you know, some of the lower tier ones have been trying to push back on this idea about Medicare for all, and mm-hmm. they get booed when they go to Democratic meetings about it. So if you're running for president as a Democrat, you don't have a choice. If you want to be anywhere close to being successful, you're going to have to go pretty hard left, which gets you the nomination in July of next year, but it ain't going to get you the presidency in November of next year, and that's what all the Democrats, I'm sure, are worried about. Now, the ones that I talk to say that their savior here is going to be Joe Biden. But we're all watching what's happened to Joe Biden this week. He's right. not having a really good week. And that's, you know, he was bound to come back down to earth, and he's coming back down hard. So I don't want to say that I'm over here in the corner eating popcorn just watching the Democrats and having fun, because there's plenty to worry about there. But there's a lot here that I think should put President Trump in a good position to win re-election, for us to retain the Senate, and for us to be in the right position to take back the House, which would be a devastating blow to the Democratic Party if we did that next year.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne, also, of course, running for Senate in 2020. Let's talk about the president in 2020, gets reelected. I would say that at that point, there's is it a mandate at that point to do even more that hasn't been done? Although I would argue, President, even like here lately on immigration with this battle or this negotiation with Mexico, there's a win, and maybe there's an infrastructure win after a second term for President Trump.
Well, no, I think he does have a mandate. Anytime a president gets reelected, you've got a mandate. Now, in President Trump's case, I think it's a mandate to do the things in his second term that he was blocked from doing in his first term by the Democrats. And so, you know, we've taken care of deregulation, we've taken care of tax reform, we've got the military turned around, we're making some progress finally on the border. We've got a lot more to do. We've got a lot more to do on the border. You mentioned infrastructure. That's very important. We've got to sit down and take a close, hard look at the money we're spending here in Washington, because we have these deficits, but it's not a result of lack of revenue. It's because we're spending too much, and we've got to get hold of that.
Let's talk about that as a senator and how you affect that. Because in the House, I mean, we always talk about y'all hold the purse strings. Y'all, you know, y'all are in the business of the dollars. But in the Senate, how can you guide that and guide that message of fiscal responsibility?
You know, it's funny you asked that. I was sitting up, we had a voting series earlier today, and I was sitting on the floor, very long voting series, talking with a bunch of my House colleagues, and they were making fun of me about going over to the Senate, and they said, you'll forget us, you'll have your nose in there, and all that sort of thing. I said, actually, I think I would like to do something a little different for a senator. I think I'd like to have a regular process where we're all working together. So ideas like the ones that I've had in the House about how we can balance the budget through attacking these mandatory spending programs. You don't do that in just the House or just the Senate. It starts in the House by the Constitution, but the two houses have to work together. And I would like to pull together a group of people who are serious about that in both houses, and then you could have the winning combination it takes to get this legislation through and get it to the president's desk.
Speaking of money, and this is a subject that steps it's in both worlds here, your current world in the House and the job you'd like to have in the Senate, and that is what we're looking at for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. This is a right. There's always been a component that's going to be local money, but this situation where it's so little federal money, I think there's people every day that are waking up to this, going, "Hey, what happened? How did we get here?"
Well, in a meeting we had a couple of years ago now in Montgomery with the State Department of Transportation officials, and that's who makes all these decisions, it's not the feds, they said, look, we've decided that we're going to go this tolling route, and we really don't need the federal money. We're going to do it without the federal money. And I said, well, gee, I've been working real hard on getting this federal grant for y'all. And they said, yeah, that's nice and all, but we're going to, you know, meet the financial needs we've got to have here by doing this toll. And that's when we got into a discussion about how they could at least buy down the amount that Alabamians would pay on the toll by using the Skull Mesa money. And they just haven't been very receptive to that, to be honest with you. Now, they do have a grant application in for this infra grant up here. I certainly support them as strongly as I can in it. I know Senator Shelby is as well. But ultimately, it's the quality of their grant application that's going to make or break them on the grant. And, you know, we've worked with them and had the people at the Federal Department of Transportation sit down with them and tell them what they need to do to have a successful grant application. So I'm very hopeful.
I've got to go back to the genesis of this conversation, though. This is the part that, you know, the stuff recently is still frustrating to people. But the state said, when you're working on the federal money, that we don't want that. We don't want that federal money. We're going to go with a private concessionaire and a tolling situation. They are choosing that over federal money. Help me understand this.
Well, frankly, I was surprised. But, you know, I have to realize I'm a federal official, not a state official. I can't tell them what to do. Certainly, that we've been driving the bus and trying to get all these federal approvals out of the way, which we should have in 3 weeks, by the way, and get it all set up for them. And also put them in touch with the right people at the Federal Department of Transportation for how this is going to be financed, because there's a way to finance that through the U.S. Department of Transportation. And I think they are actively pursuing that. But at the end of the day, you got to have money to pay that financing back. And they were clearly on this, we're going to use tolls path, and didn't seem that interested in our trying to get this federal money, although they have made the application. And as I say, we've had them in touch with the Federal Department of Transportation officials to help them know what they need to do to make a really good grant application. So let's hope that works.
All right, we'll be right back. More with Congressman Bradley Byrne. We are live from Gulf Coast Tools for Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live at Gulf Coast Tools in Foley. And we'll be here for another half hour or more. And the Big Green Egg selection for Dad, maybe the great power tools from Makita, DeWalt, Festool, they're all here. And while you're here, too, grab some of the new FM Talk 106.5 Huggers, the new run. Plus, we're serving pulled pork barbecue and Kaneka sausage dogs out front. A lot of people having lunch with us. Enjoy meeting all y'all when you stop on by. Continue our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, of course, candidate for U.S. Senate. The first one in, and the one that, at least at last time I checked, had been at least getting the most dollar votes out of anybody who wants to be our next senator. Is that still the case?
Well, we don't know. We won't have the next filing date till July the 15th, so I'm the only one that filed a financial filing for the first quarter because I was the only one that announced. But we've had two others that have announced since then, so we'll see their reports in about another month. But, you know, Sean, I don't spend a whole lot of time worrying about what the other guys are doing. I'm worried about what I'm doing or not doing. And so we continue to do what we've been doing since the very beginning. We started 90-plus days ago. And as I say, we're getting great reception. And, yes, we've been successful in raising money. And you know, the money is important because that's how we buy ads on radio shows and television mm-hmm. shows. And that is one way that you get your name identification up in places like Birmingham and Huntsville where they don't know me as well. So we continue to do all that.
All right. I want to talk about you mentioned that taking the fight to Washington, a senator will fight for Alabama State, you know, state of Alabama and our values. What does that look like in the Senate? How do you make the case for Alabama in that most austere body?
Well, you do it in a couple of different ways. One is you got to remember the Senate is only 100 people. So it is intensely relationship driven. I have a number of relationships over there already, not just with our senators, particularly Senator Shelby, but also with senators really from kind of all over the country through the work I've done up here already. So those relationships are extremely important. And they're time intensive. You got to spend time on relationships to make sure people know you, understand you, and say, I like him. If he's up there saying these things, they must be important to him and his state. But secondly, you've got to know how to go up there and be an advocate. And sometimes that means you've got to be a pretty tough advocate because it's not all sweet and roses up here. I can tell you in the fights we've had since I've been here over things like the littoral combat ship we make in our shipyard in Mobile, those are tough fights. We just finished at 7 a.m. this morning the markup on the National Defense Authorization Act for next fiscal year. And, you know, we're making the shift to the frigate. And the thing I was concerned about was I didn't think the Navy was giving enough attention to the whole cost factor in picking the right ship. And so we were able to insert language into that bill that says that cost is a critical factor in picking the ship. And, you know, they've got it down to 4 shipyards. Well, I have 100% confidence that our shipyard will be the low bidder on the ship. So getting that language in there, which was pretty hard work, that was critically important. So you have to understand how to have the relationships, but also do the tough work where you're working the legislative stuff to get the things that matter for the people you represent. In the case of the Senate, that's people all over the state of Alabama. That means the stuff I've been working on in Mobile, the things for Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, or things we're trying to do for Fort Rucker down there in Ozark, or obviously a lot of stuff for Redstone Arsenal up in Huntsville. So there's a lot of stuff you do both on the relationship side but also on that hardcore legislative side.
Yeah, and you've got to make that case to people. And we've talked about it, what you had to do in the House. It's fewer people, like you said, in the Senate to make that case to. But I'm thinking even something like right now with the tariffs, whether you look at the most recent question with Mexico, and I want to get into that with you, or China, it's a tough situation because I imagine you would have other senators wanting you to, you know, stand with exactly what the president's saying at this time or that time on something. And then you look back to the state of Alabama and go, wow, that tariff may be harmful in the short term, at least Alabama, if not in the long term.
Oh, no, we've already been doing that, Sean. We've had dozens of Alabama companies that among them employ, you know, like tens of thousands of Alabamians who come to see us over various issues that various ones of them have about various tariffs. And, you know, one of the criticisms I would have for Senator Jones is his way of dealing with that is to have a press conference and get into a shouting match with the Trump administration in the news. Well, you know, one thing I have observed about President Trump and his team, you're not going to persuade them that way. So what we do is we spend the time, and it does take a lot of time, to meet with them and say, all right, we've listened to this company. Here's what they're telling us. This is why this company is important. This is how many people they employ. This is the economic impact of what they're discussing. And I got to tell you, I think the people both in the White House and in the Department of Commerce have been great at listening to us. They come to my office. They sit there. They do their homework. They understand what we're saying. They go back. They try to implement certain things that help this company and that company. But at the end of the day, this tariff thing and this whole trade, these trade issues, this is tough stuff. This is about as tough of stuff as you can get into. And there's no way for a senator or, in my case right now, a congressman, to be successful in that unless you really do your homework and you're willing to spend the time it takes to be a really good advocate for the state that you represent and the companies there that employ so many people.
Let's talk about the specifically now in this with Mexico. It looks like, and it's funny how any piece of information, it goes through different filters, and you know, both sides say it's a win, or one side says it's a loss, the other side says it's a win. But the president's week with Mexico looks like there's been some movement. Exactly, you know, exactly what people might have thought would have happened, but there is some enhanced security being done by Mexico to hopefully stem the tide of refugees on our southern border.
Yes. I mean, here's the problem. The president and his people have been talking to the Mexican government officials about this for months and obviously hadn't gotten any real movement. They may have had discussions, but they hadn't had any real movement. Well, the president's now got them to move. They're now going to take several thousand troops and put them on their southern border to keep them from coming into Mexico. We've got these new understandings about how we're going to process asylum seekers trying to get to the United States. I think these are all significant moves forward. Now, none of that replaces the need for us to build a wall on our southern border, to make sure we have the technology that's needed down there, make sure that we have the people that know what they're doing down there, an adequate number of them. And it doesn't replace changing our laws so that we process asylum seekers so much quickly. You know, I saw a statistic the other day that didn't surprise me. The vast majority of people who come here seeking asylum don't even show up for their court dates. not only do they not win because they're not entitled to asylum, when we give them a court date to come and have a court determine if they're entitled to asylum, they don't even show up. Well, that means they're just gaming the system, and we've got to change the law so that they don't game the system anymore.
And if you're just joining us, talking to AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, of course, running Senate for 2020. Hey, what's the latest on the pay raise in Washington?
It didn't go over.
The Democrats weren't happy with
you. The Democratic leadership thought it was going to go over. You know, I filed an amendment, proposed amendment to one of these appropriations bills that we're going through right now to block it. And I mean, and I wasn't the only one. There were others. I mean, before the afternoon was done, they pulled it. Now, they just pulled it. They didn't say, no, we're not going to do it. They just sort of pulled it back, which means it could come forward again next week or the week after that. So we're going to remain vigilant about it, and we're going to continue to push that amendment. We're not going to back off on it. I don't think the American people think that the people in Congress deserve a pay raise.
No,
and sitting
in
the middle of it right now, I can tell you we sure don't deserve a pay raise because we're not getting anything done. And I don't believe you should pay people for not getting anything done. So while they pulled the bill back, it's temporary. And we'll see what they've done when they pull that bill back before the Congress. And if they have a pay raise again in there, we're going to have our amendment ready. We'll see if they've got the courage to stick with it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. When you do this, so people understand why you do this on the merits of not believing there should be a pay raise, but they would have to come out specifically and be on record that they're for their pay raise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to insist on a roll call vote. You know, I did this, Sean, when I was in the state Senate back in 2007 at the beginning of that quadrennium. I was a state senator. And the Democrats who controlled the House and the Senate back then in Montgomery, they wanted to push through a huge pay raise. I mean, like taking us from $32,000 a year to $50-some-odd thousand a year. And they wanted to do it on a voice vote without having to have people actually have to put their name by it. And we raised a stink about it, but Jim Folsom was lieutenant governor, and he just gaveled it through. Well, Governor Riley vetoed it, and when it came back through the second time, they couldn't hide, and there were several of us. I was one that stood up and said, we insist on a roll call vote, so everybody had to put their name behind it. And some of us, I was one of them, actually went down to the Secretary of the Senate and gave him a letter that says, I do not want this pay raise. Do not give me this pay raise, because I didn't approve of the way they were doing it, and I sure didn't approve of the extent to which they were trying to raise their pay. So this is not a new thing for me. I fought these pay raises when I was in the legislature, and I'm surprised I'm having to do it here in Washington, but I'm having to do it here in Washington.
All right, I have just a couple questions before. I know you've got to get back. You've given us a lot of time. But I want to ask, number one here, I'm going to kind of put a bunch of different questions into one from the text line. But, I have to ask you this one first. There, people are asking, when you said someone with the state or someone with some department with the state did not want the federal fund, was not going to go with the federal funding you were working on for the bridge, they said, who is that? What department?
It's the State Department, the Alabama Department of Transportation. That's
so
who runs the state highway system, and that's who actually takes the federal dollars that are flowing to the state through the federal gas tax and builds our roads and surfaces our roads, et cetera. It's the State Department of Transportation.
So it is the person, the group saying that was LDOT.
LDOT.
Okay, because there's a bunch of people who are asking that question right there. Because I think that, you know, people wake up to different parts of this bridge story that we're talking about a Tolstoy novel here by the time we're said and done.
Well, I was surprised. This meeting, there were state officials and local officials, and I was there because we were still in the throes of trying to get these regulatory approvals done. And I was working pretty hard and still am working pretty hard on these grants. And I was just surprised that they were like, nope, we're going to do this by tolls. This is what we've decided. X number of percent of the people driving on that bridge are from out of state. We're going to make people from out of state pay for it. My reaction was, but yeah, that there's that other percent of the people that drive on that bridge that are like my constituents. They're from Alabama. And I think I do have to be an advocate for them. I said, nope, we're going to make these people from out of state. And if people down in your area are going to have to pay some more, they will too. That's the only way we're going to be able to build this bridge. And I walked away from that meeting, and after sitting through that meeting, I said, you know, I'm a federal official. I need to know my place here. I sort of push this as far as I can push it. The state and local officials will take that part of it from here, and I'm going to go do my federal job to make sure we get whatever federal grant money we can, and at the same time that we get all these regulatory approvals done.
All right, and then this one, before we wrap up, so this is for sure the political question du jour, and I had a little rant on it this morning, but with Stephanopoulos asking President Trump about getting information from a foreign source, now I think he put some disclaimers in there, foreign source that was negative information on one of his opponents, you know, would he use it or what would he do? Would he immediately call the FBI and not use it? Congressman Byrne, I found the question, to be frank, infantile and laughable on a couple different levels, especially for Stephanopoulos, who I know is not a naive guy, coming out of the Clinton apparatus to ask that question. But your take on it, number one, your take on the question. Number two, I want to ask you that same question. You're in the situation. There's Oppo research. You get a phone call. Do you call the FBI? Do you go with the information? What do you do?
Well, let me start off first with what George Stephanopoulos did when he was working the Clinton campaign in 1992. They got some information from Brazil that were indicating that some of the campaign stuff for the Bush campaign were coming from Brazil. And it was Brazil sources, okay?
Okay.
And there's actually a film about this. I think it's called War Room. And so you've got James Carville and George Stephanopoulos saying, oh, how quickly can we get down to Brazil and get this information from these people from Brazil that have given it to us? So it's a little hypocritical for them to be judgmental about that with President Trump. Look, it's not a crime for American people to get information, even political information, from people from other countries. That's not a crime. And I know people think if you're a hyper-partisan Democrat that, well, it should be a crime. Well, if it should be a crime, then it should have been a crime to Bill Clinton and George Stephanopoulos.
Right, right.
But the truth of the matter is that information is information. Now, some information you do have to spend money to get, I understand that. But if somebody wants to give you information, you take it. Now, what you do with it is another thing. And if you think that it's been gotten in an inappropriate way, then you should go forward to the law enforcement people and say, hey, this information was provided to me. I think it was acquired in an inappropriate way. I don't know everything there is about it. You're the law enforcement officials. Here's the information I have. I will completely cooperate with you.
We'll see.
I don't have
too
many people from foreign countries trying to give me opposition research.
Right, right. I know, and it's a hypothetical, but it's today's hypothetical, so I wanted to make sure that we got you talking about that. All right, if people have, obviously by some of this information, these ballot tests and all this that come out, you really don't need people to find out more about you down here in our neck of the woods, but some of them might be traveling through our area. They want to find more about your Senate run. How do they do it?
BradleyByrne.com, BradleyByrne.com.
Check it out right there. All right, so hopefully we get to talk to you again, maybe even get you back for some snapper fishing during Independence Day or something. When do y'all leave Washington next? All right, good deal. Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for Senate 2020, our guest, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. We are live at Gulf Coast Tools in Foley.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Gulf Coast Tools. And if you're looking for that gift for yourself, for dad, anybody in between, but I would say for dad, this is like this is about the best stop for most dads I know, and I'm being one of those dads. This store's got it. Power tools from DeWalt, Makita, Festool, Craig. Also, that huge selection of Big Green Egg. So they have, I think, the five different sizes, all the accessories, the repair parts, everything for Big Green Egg right here at Gulf Coast Tools in Foley across from the Popeyes on 59. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit. You know you're in the right place. So stop by, see us, be hanging out here, having lunch for a little bit longer, plus some FM Talk 106.5 goodies. That new run of Huggers, been giving those away today. You can come get yours right here at Gulf Coast Tools. And by the way, speaking of things going going on, another great event going on tonight, this going on at Cottage Hill Package. And this whole new vibe that's happening here, I know my man Dalton has sampled some of this before. I'm not. I don't know about the seltzers out there, the spiked seltzers, but I can learn tonight because Cottage Hill Package, the Manis family, has another great tasting event. This one going on from 6 to 8 with Harpoon Arctic Summer Seltzer. Your chance to come out and taste various seltzers. They have like less than 2 carbs, low calories. In other words, it's a beverage, a spiked seltzer, something with alcohol in it, but does not have all the carbs, does not have all the calories. And you can check it out by showing up tonight and sample them for free at Cottage Hill Package, corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. They're online at cottagehillpackage.com, and make sure to like them on Facebook. All right, so that's tonight, 6 to 8, and I got to learn about these seltzers. Dalton's way ahead of me on this. Hey, and Dalton, if you got a second in there, too, I want to fire up the massive phone lines at the FM Talk 106.5 studios, because I got another pair of tickets for the 17th Annual Mystic Striper Society Fish and Rodeo. Speaking of Father's Day gifts, that is Saturday, and it starts at 6, fish till 5. Great party, headquartered at Dolphin Island Marina. And we'll take caller number 6 at 343-0106, 343-0106. Got a pair of tickets for you. That means you can take Dad fishing for the day, for Saturday. Or it doesn't have to be Dad. Take somebody else. But it'd be a cool way to get out and celebrate Dad on this Father's Day weekend. Once again, more information, Mystic Stripers Rodeo online. Just look for that on Facebook and online, and you'll get ticket buying information, how to get them from the vendors and online, and also all the different prizes and jackpots and all that good stuff. But good job, whomever. I'm telling you ahead of time, congratulations on those tickets for the Mystic Striper Society Fish and Rodeo. All right, for the whole gang here at Gulf Coast Tools, big thank you to all y'all coming out and being part of this today. And I'll talk to you in the morning for Mobile Mornings. Paul Feinbaum Show is on the way next.